Hey, this is Simon Scriver.
And this is Nikki Bell.
We are running a virtual fundraising conference on November 19th. It's called Fundraising Everywhere, and you can find it at fundraisingeverywhere.com.
There's some amazing speakers that we've got lined up for you. We've got some names on there that you will be familiar with and some speakers that you may not have heard before, but all of them will be sharing amazing fundraising methods that are proven to work, and they will be teaching us how to do that in our own charities.
We've tried to make it really affordable for all organizations, but for small charities, it is completely free. So go look at it at fundraisingeverywhere.com, register now. Join us. It will be accessible, it will be affordable, and it is amazing.
Yes.
You're listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more. Here's your host, as always, Simon Scriver.
You're very welcome. If you're listening to this live or watching this being recorded live or listening live, or if you're listening later, you know, usually on a Monday on the fundraising podcast, we do like a quick tip. But actually today, every once in a while, I do kind of more of a waxing lyrical, ranty type thing. And today, all over social media, you know, in the fundraising sector anyway, in our little bubble, people have been talking about RNLI. The Royal National Lifeboat Institution, I want to say. I probably should have looked that up before I started. And so basically this podcast for me today is just to talk a little bit about what's happened, maybe explain it a little bit briefly to people outside of the UK and Ireland who've never heard of the RNLI or don't know what's happened. And to, I suppose, talk about what it means for us as fundraisers and in the nonprofit sector. And what we're going to do about it. And I suppose therein lies the quick tip almost. It's like the alchemist. Everything we've been looking for is back to where it was. So actually there is a quick tip about how we deal with these kind of fake scandals, you know, these kind of bullshit things that people like the Daily Mail come out with. So there's going to be a little bit of a quick tip in there. I won't keep you long. So essentially what the scandal is, what the story is that a couple of newspapers, the one, you know, that most people maybe heard of, the Daily Mail led with the story. Daily Mail is known for like this kind of sensationalist shit and attacking kind of maybe more liberal, attacking left wing, attacking a more caring society. And so they attacked the RNLI about the money that RNLI spends overseas. Yeah. And so, I mean, I'll read you a bit of it. Headline, they love their long headlines. RNLI buys burkinis for Africans as it axes 100 UK jobs. How £3.3 million of donations to lifeboat charity are spent abroad, including aid for Tanzania swimmers and creches in Bangladesh. I should be doing this in like the Daily Mail or the Mail Online reader voice. RNLI buys burkinis for Africans. Did you hear this shit? They're buying burkinis. It goes on to break it down a little bit more. What does it say about the burkinis? That donations are being spent on swimsuits. Donations are being spent on swimsuits for devout Muslim women in Tanzania and on funding creches in Bangladesh, which the RNLI claims helps to prevent drownings overseas. Essentially, what they mean by that is yeah, it does help to prevent drownings because devout Muslims, you know, young girls, they don't take the time to learn to swim, or they may be shamed or embarrassed about swimming because they don't have a swimsuit that covers them up in accordance with their faith. So RNLI very cleverly acknowledged that, realized this was one of the things holding them back. And yeah, they provide burkinis so that these girls actually learn to swim. So what they're doing is they're spending, I think it's less than 2% of their income, of their fundraise, of their turnover overseas, not in Britain, yeah? And people are up in arms about it. So there's a couple Tory MPs quoted in here. Tories are the bastards who kind of keep getting into power and keep fucking things up. Tory MP Nigel Evans said, the fact the RNLI are cutting staff in the UK but boosting spending on these international projects begs the question of what the priority of the organisation is. They are risking the reputation of the charity. I would say 99% of the British public giving money to them have not the faintest idea it's being diverted to projects overseas. Diverted, like it's being kind of intercepted and set across. The language is really interesting in these shoddy journalistic attempts. Andrew Bridgen, a Tory MP, told The Times, "It's the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, not the Royal International Lifeboat Institution. It's national." His argument is because it's got the word national in it, that it should stay national. But if you look at RNLI, they're very clear about all this. Their purpose, for a start, their purpose says that RNLI saves lives at sea. Doesn't mention any of that other stuff, about differentiating about people's, the value of people's lives. Their vision is to end preventable loss of life at sea. Again, it doesn't differentiate. It doesn't talk about that you have to be British to be taught to swim or to be rescued. You don't have to be in Blighty. And it's all available on their website. Obviously, they're very transparent. All their spending is broken down on the website in their annual reports. Papers have a tendency to frame these as exposés. They've uncovered this thing, even though charities are always really public about it and actually promote it. One thing that was interesting about what that they've skirted over is that RNLI is active in Ireland. Yeah. So here in Ireland, RNLI has a presence, obviously not as big as the UK. And if you look at the finances, some of the money, it looks like some of the money is coming from the UK. So actually some of the British donation is being diverted to Ireland. And they don't really kick up a stink about this, which is weird because they've been quite attacking of the Irish recently, no dogs, no Irish, because they see us as the problem with Brexit. But here, interestingly, we're counted as national, so there doesn't seem to be an issue about spending money in Ireland. I guess because we're white, or we're close enough that it doesn't seem like something that they're going to be really pissed off with. So that's interesting. The Irish have kind of got a waved through this one. We kind of got away with it, even though we're over here trying to ruin Brexit because the British deserve it. So I don't know. So anyway, the RNLI, they responded pretty quickly to this stuff. They came out very publicly, said, yeah, it's all true. It's all there. And we're really proud of it. And they went on to detail, if you go onto the homepage, rnli.org, they actually, the headline there is why we want to end drowning worldwide and why it's really important to them. And it makes a lot of sense. And it's a great response. And RNLI have been really good at responding to this. But what you get on social media and in the comment section of all this stuff is the usual tripe of people with that kind of phrase of, I'm never going to donate to them again, I'm canceling my donation, this kind of empty threat that people throw out sometimes. And I mean, there's a few possible scenarios here. Like there's the scenario that that people are giving, that these people are regular givers. Let's suspend belief for a second and assume, they're giving and they are stopping because they only want to save people from drowning if they grew up down the road from them. Yeah. So if they can drive to where that person is and if they look like them, then they're okay with saving them from drowning. But other people, they don't want to. So that's one of the scenarios that, they are a donor and they didn't know any of this stuff. And then it's come to their attention. They're like, no, I only want to save white people. So that's potentially one scenario. What I think is probably more likely is that they never donated. Looking at some of these comments with the St. George's flag and stuff in their profiles. There's a big crossover with people who voted to leave the EU, I think. So I think it's probably more likely they never donated. And they're the people who just kind of use this as an opportunity to bash people overseas and bash people who are a little bit different for them. They're the people who when a plane crashes and like they scan the newspaper article or listen to the news to hear how many Britons died, because that's important to them, as opposed to like, this is how many human beings died. They have that like distinction. They distinguish between people who are on that side of the border and this side of the border. You know, the xenophobia of like, it's totally different as soon as you cross that river that some rich fucker years ago made. It's totally different. We should treat them differently. So there's that kind of mentality, you know, and maybe they have that mentality that the people in the next county, you know, people in Bedford Hart and Hockenshire, then fuck them. And they maybe have that distinction between people who live on a different road, you know, charity begins at home in my home. Or, you know, even people in the next room, maybe they kind of distinguish it that if they're closer to them, that they think more, you know, we should help them more because they're closer. These are people who are like, who go on, you know, people who like live in Spain, emigrate to Spain and then complain about immigrants and things like that. And say things like, I just want me fish and chips. These savages put mayonnaise on it. So it's weird. I find it weird that they have a distinction. You know, they'd rather help like an adult who's a complete asshole and is drunk and kind of brought it on themselves. They, you know, they fell off their yacht. They'd rather help them because they're British than help like a school kid who's a total innocent, who's just trying to get by and is vulnerable because the parents both have to work and they're not there, or their parents died. Or, you know, like this kind of, just because you have one passport, you're worth more. And it's such a weird thing for them to like be proud of. It's like this pride, this nationalistic pride, which I hate in every country. And actually, I think borders are probably the problem of everything. But this nationalistic pride that you're proud to like go to war and you're proud to die because it's a country, as opposed to the pride of helping people who are vulnerable, regardless of what. I mean, that for me just seems like something to be much more proud of. So yeah, so these people are boycotting, you know, if they get into trouble out in the sea and someone tries to rescue them, they'll be like, no, don't save me, I'm boycotting you fuckers. Especially if the volunteer who's trying to save them doesn't look like them, that'll be really, really tricky. So that's kind of what's happening is you have this segment, and I do believe it's like a small segment of racist people who are capitalizing on this kind of story and just using it as a excuse to bash. Then you have on the flip side of it, people in the charity sector or people who are really committed to this kind of stuff, who are passionately defending it and giving money and being very vocal about it. And that's really, really lovely to see. And then you have people, I suppose the majority of people are maybe in the middle and then maybe don't really understand either side of the issue too much. They don't spend a lot of time thinking about it. And they're easily swayed. Not to say that there's anything, you know, that they're stupid or anything, but, you know, we can't focus on all these issues that are going on all the time around us. So we have our kind of our levels of expertise in certain areas. And everything else, we just kind of go along with. We just kind of believe, not believe, but we read the headline. We read the top line of it and we believe it and we absorb it. And we're influenced to the extent that it's almost like the last thing we read is the thing we go along with. And I think we all do that, you know? And I think that's who has the headspace to digest all this stuff. Yeah, we should do a little bit more reading. But we, you know, and a little bit more comprehending and trying to understand the stuff before we make decisions. But life is short and life is tough. So instead, what we have here now is this kind of battle between almost like between good and evil online, where the racists are, you know, saying, yeah, this is a total mistake, you should cancel. And people are being kind of maybe swayed by that. And then the others who are defending it, and we're swaying them back. So I think there's actions we need to take, especially as a sector, especially in fundraising and in charitable marketing, that we need to take these actions to kind of win people back, or the people on the fence, to kind of lean them towards us and at least to open their minds and allow them to understand it a little bit. So there's a few things we want to do. So let's break it down. So the people who are especially racist, or the people who are complaining about this and say they're canceling their donations, if you're listening to this, which I imagine you're not, there's a few actions you can take. So if you're one of the people complaining, I would say next time you need to research your donations a bit better. So before you make a donation, you know, have a look at the annual reports, have a look at what's on the website. Just make sure none of your money is going to go to people who have a different color skin or a different religion, or kids who live like in a different place from you. Yeah. So if that's really important to you, you can find it pretty quickly on charity websites that you don't do that. What you can do, actually, while you're doing that research, you can also research on the impact Britain has had on countries like this. I don't know much about Tanzania. I don't know much about Bangladesh beyond the concert for Bangladesh. But I imagine if I Googled it, Britain's probably colonized them. If they haven't colonized them, they've definitely had a negative impact on them, and probably murdered a bunch of them. So it might be worth just looking into what kind of negative impact we've had, and maybe what kind of penance, what kind of positive payback you need to kind of give across. If you do decide to donate to a caring charity, as opposed to like one of the, you know, a racist charity that you might find, if you donate to a caring charity like this who doesn't discriminate, then, you know, think about ring fencing your donation and actually call them up and say, I only want my donation to go to fuckwits like me, who maybe have like a Union Jack tattooed on them, and then like a picture of a baby's face, and then maybe their mom's name from when their mom died or something like that. So have that kind of conversation about ring fencing the donation. And then if you're going to like insist on blaming the vulnerable for your problems, you know, through the likes of Brexit, through the likes of these stories, I suppose you have to, what would be good to kind of reflect on is who the real problem is. And actually, it's people like the Tories, and it's people, the wealthy people, it's people who own the Daily Mail, people like those. Those are the people who are having a negative impact on your lives and your jobs. It's not school children who are learning how to swim. And it's not people who are escaping, you know, countries because their lives are at risk and coming to your country and having a positive impact there. It's not those people. It's the kind of the rich and in power who are taking advantage of you. And they're very clever about it, because what they're doing is they're saying things to you like, well, we have to cut funding to either people with disabilities or the elderly, and it's totally up to you to choose. You know, you just have to pick one of those. So what they're doing is they're pitting the most vulnerable against each other. And I would argue the people who are complaining about this RNLI story are probably vulnerable people. You know, they're possibly living in vulnerable circumstances. They're reading the Daily Mail and things like that. So what's happening is the Daily Mail is pitting you against a fake enemy. And so it's just kind of worth reflecting on that, about how you're spending your time and who you're really angry with. And if after all of that, you still hate these school children for wearing bikinis and learning to swim, if you still hate that 2% of your donation went to support someone in a different country, then what you can do is just submerge your face into like a body of water and just hold it there for about 20 to 25 minutes. And then the problem will probably go away. Now, if you're on the other side of the spectrum, if you're like a fundraiser or you work in the charity sector, and probably you are if you listen to this podcast, if you're one of the couple of people who listen to it, it's really important that we speak up in support and in solidarity of RNLI, because these stories come round all the time. Yeah, it's just whenever there's a quiet news day, whenever these papers are trying to distract us from something, they attack the charity sector because it's easy to attack. And one of the reasons it's easy to attack is because we don't defend it. Yeah, we don't defend it as much as we should, because, and this is understandable, we're afraid to put our head up. Yeah, especially, you know, it's easy enough for me as a consultant. I don't have a whole lot to lose in terms of that side of it. But as a charity, charities have a lot, or feel they have a lot to lose, because if they put their head up, suddenly the attention gets put onto them. Suddenly people start questioning them. They start making up bullshit headlines like this about them, and it might have a negative impact on their donations. But it comes back to that. Do you remember that, like that old poem, the first they came poem? And it's like, first they came for this and I didn't complain. Then first they came for the socialists and I didn't complain because I wasn't a socialist. Then they came for the Jews and I didn't complain because I wasn't a Jew. So maybe it's not an appropriate comparison, but there's truth to it in that if we don't defend other organizations now, when our turn comes around, and it will come around, when it comes around, there will be no one there to defend you. Yeah. So we have to defend them because it's in a selfish point of view, because eventually it's going to come around and we're going to defend them. But you also have to understand that it is your problem. Yeah. And so you might see the RNLI negative impact and you might think we have nothing to do with lifeboats. We have nothing to do with overseas. It doesn't affect us, but it does, because what it does is it has a negative impact on charitable giving. Yeah. I mean, as it turns out, this looks like the pushback is enough that it's not going to have a negative impact. But the negative perception that hits those people in the middle of the spectrum, who are on the fence and kind of swayed, the ones who get pushed away from us because they begin to lose trust in the sector, because they begin to believe these articles, because nobody swayed them back the other way, because the last thing they read was this Daily Mail headline, those people we lose. And the charity sector loses, and the income that comes into our sector and the trust levels in our sector, we lose them, and they're really, really hard to pull back. So, and this is what we're seeing. This is why trust declines in our sector. It's because of scandals in the past. It declines in the sector. It declines for the organizations who are involved especially, but for the sector as a whole, people lose faith in it because they clump us all together. They see us as charities. They see us as just like one big organization helping. They donate or they don't donate. And so those people in the middle are the ones I'm worried about, the ones who are on the fence, the silent observers who are believing this last thing. And what we have to do is we have to speak out so they hear us. They're not going to ask us questions. They're not going to interact with us. They're not the ones posting the comments, but they're watching them and they're listening. And so when they see on Twitter us, or, you know, arguing the truth, arguing the facts, and arguing, you know, to be caring, we're arguing with some like fascist dickhead who's like, is just an idiot. They're watching that conversation and they're pulling out bits and pieces from that. So if we're putting across good arguments, if we're defending it, if we seem rational, if we seem reasonable, open, transparent, and we're sharing the truth and it's all lovely stuff, then they take that. And that has an impact on their giving forever. And that's why we need to do it. It's not because of the people we're arguing with. We're not going to change the Daily Mail's opinion. We're not going to change, you know, fucking Sharon's opinion, who, you know, I just don't trust him. We're not going to change her opinion, but the audience's opinion we can change. Yeah. Or we can keep that audience on our side by arguing. So it's the responsibility in a situation like this, and this is still going on right now, so you can still do it, is to post on social media, is to put out public statements from your organization, is to get your CEO to say something publicly and rise and defend the sector. Because that's how we regain trust. That's how we maintain trust. That's how we maintain our level of donations. But that's how we increase it over things like sales of the Daily Mail and whatever else these fucking people are spending their money on. It's about winning back that money and that trust and that support. And we do that by publicly arguing so the audience can see us. So that's it. That's the end of my waxing lyrical rant. Just to say huge support to RNLIs, the people who are dealing with social media, the senior management team, everyone in there who's going to be taking shit, the receptionist who's getting all these phone calls from just like numpties. Just massive kudos to them. It will pass in a few days. Well done. I hope RNLI ends up even better off because of this, because people kind of fighting back and giving in that way. And well done to everyone, especially the organizations, the other charities who didn't have to, but stood up to defend it. It's amazing. And so until the next scandal.
You've been listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more or get in touch with Simon. Or don't, whatever, you're big enough to make your own decisions.
Hey, this is Simon Scriver.
And this is Nikki Bell.
We are running a virtual fundraising conference on November 19th. It's called Fundraising Everywhere, and you can find it at fundraisingeverywhere.com.
There's some amazing speakers that we've got lined up for you. We've got some names on there that you will be familiar with and some speakers that you may not have heard before, but all of them will be sharing amazing fundraising methods that are proven to work, and they will be teaching us how to do that in our own charities.
We've tried to make it really affordable for all organizations, but for small charities, it is completely free. So go look at it at fundraisingeverywhere.com, register now. Join us. It will be accessible, it will be affordable, and it is amazing.
Yes.